Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with Dane Baptiste. If you like these, do come along and see one live if you can. We're doing them every Monday till the end of November. Coming up on the 31st of October is Dawn French and Deborah Francis White. There's only a few tickets left for that, so be quick if you can. 7th of November, we haven't got a guest yet, but there's someone very exciting in the pipeline. It might be worth taking a chance on that. Someone I've been looking forward to trying to get on for a long time, who will be a bit of a handful if we get him slash her. And we've got Sarah Pascoe and Tourette's Hero, which is Jess Tom. She's a woman who has Tourette syndrome, which will be interesting and hopefully illuminating. That is on the 14th of November. We've got Sarah Millican on the 21st, plus to be announced, and David Baddiel and Lucy Porter on the final one on the 28th of November. Come to the Leicester Square Theatre. It's 7 p.m. or go to leicestersquaretheatre.com to buy tickets. And there's an As It Occurs to Me on the 13th of November if you want to come and see that recorded live, which would be helpful because that will help us earn more money to make the sketches that we can't afford to make at the moment. Anyway, let's crack on with Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who just yesterday afternoon was administering CPR outside the MI5 building by Vauxhall in the Thames, and that is true. Will you please welcome Richard Herring? Welcome to the show. It's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast that you're watching now. But I was in a fridge the other day, and the milk in there is quite cool, and it called it Relisifer. So there you go. That is a little trick. Yesterday I've been filming a short film. I'm a very in-demand actor. For productions that don't pay you any money, and I was playing, I can't give too much away, but I was playing a character who I wasn't really giving CPR. I was pretending to give CPR to someone, but I was so good, it was like I was doing it. Someone came over and thought it was a genuine emergency. That's how good my acting was. But we think it's amazing they managed to kind of get permits to film right outside the MI5 building at Vauxhall. You'll know it if you're from London. And you could see all the cameras sort of turning to look at us. And the police came down and said, "What are you doing here?" And we showed them the permits. They couldn't believe we'd been allowed to. But also on the day that we did it, there was a walk between the bridges for diabetes with 2,000 people in pink shirts just walking along the... So that fucked things up a little bit for us. In continuity terms, we managed to stop them because most of them had diabetes. They were quite easy to restrain. And we're back a couple of weeks in time for those people at home, but it's been such an amazing time for news that news items happen like 5 days ago that you've now forgotten about because so much more news. Remember like last week when that UKIP bloke did or didn't get punched and nearly died? I'd forgotten that. That was only like 4 or 5 days ago, because Trump has been in the news again. He's in trouble for grabbing. He thinks it's a good idea to grab pussies, which isn't it? It's never. I don't think there's any. There's no occasion when you should grab any kind of pussy. I don't think. The grab is the wrong move, I think. Even with permission, can I grab your pussy? Well, not grab it. Grab it. So it was an odd thing to do. And in the presidential debate, he said, you know, it was banter, locker room banter. That's the kind of thing we talk about in the locker room, right, guys? Just what pussies we can grab. And go, yeah. Because we love it in the locker room to talk about sexual assaults. We admire men. That's it. We don't like it in the real world, but when in the locker room, yes, I admire you for sexually assaulting women. That is good. That is not true. I was being sarcastic there, Andy. But in the presidential debate, he said, yeah, sure, I've done that. But look at ISIS. Look at the things they're doing. I mean, if that's the new moral bar, then we can get away with anything, can't we? So anyway, it's been fun with him. All right, so I should also say because of the Kickstarter, there's a few things that turn up in these episodes which will be shamelessly for money. And one of those things is I have to insult Nick Smee, who has paid for me to insult him. And my insult for you, Nick Smee, is your name is a rhyme for Dick Wee. And that is, I'm sure you've heard that before. Also, Smee is one of the pirates in Peter Pan, so yeah, take that. Not even one of the good ones. Taking him down. And also here we have Richard Thompson, who's sitting back there. He should be wearing a hat, but he's a very kind man. He said, I gave him a Hollister Day hat, thank you. It was a happy birthday hat with the birth crossed out and Rehullastapur written in Sharpie. That's going to be worth a lot of money one of these days. I gave one to his lovely partner as well, and that wasn't part of the... That's a free hat, that was. They cost me £1.99 for 8 of those, so... And they get some champagne. They get a whole bottle of champagne. They've got the Antoine de Clavery champagne, which is one of the main... That's one of the main champagnes. That's one of the classy. Have you ever had that? The Anton? Does she? Because you look like a sophisticated lady. Never had Anton de Clavery? It's 15 quid at Sainsbury's tonight. So that is for a whole bottle. Yeah. So anyway, he's over there. We might get him to ask a question. Thank you very much, Richard. I can call you a fucking idiot if you like, because that's an extra. Would you like that? Yeah, you're a fucking idiot. So there you go. Thanks for the money. It was nice of you. He has helped pay for. He's probably paid nearly all of George's wages. That's he's paid for you. If you take off the 15 quid of the champagne, though, and £2 for the hat. I paid for the £2 for the hats out of my own money. That's just the kind of guy I am. Yeah. A man who doesn't go to a pound shop and use a credit card. That is the kind of man I am. So, look, we're going to crack on with our guest tonight. He is probably best known for his appearance on Celebrity Squares. That's where you've seen him. That's why all these people have turned out tonight to see him. Will you please welcome Dane Baptiste, ladies and gentlemen? Dane Baptiste. Thank you. Come in. Sit down. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
I'm getting over a cold, so you may have to excuse some spluttering between answers.
Okay, well that's fair enough. I was very ill last week and the week before, weirdly. So it's not as bad as that. I said this to Hans Joanne last week, but I had, when I was interviewing Armando Iannucci, I had so much snot in my nose that I had to sniff it back, and then I couldn't do anything about it, so I just had to swallow.
Yeah.
You know what that's like? So
I've been there.
Yeah, look out for that.
I won't be as graphic describing my symptoms.
I like to start. So do you remember, what do you remember? The Celebrity Squares thing, obviously.
Yeah.
That's your main accolade thus far.
It is. I mean, I did meet Warwick Davis. So,
did you?
Yeah,
well, he hosted it.
So that was cool.
Well, who were the other celebrities on there?
I was on with Alice Levine of BBC Radio 1 fame, and Frank Skinner was on there.
Cool.
Rylan.
How was he?
Talkative.
Was he? Yeah.
He was cool. Ashleen B was on with me as well.
Oh, she's nice.
Yeah, she was nice. And I think Catherine Turner from, I think, from Coronation
Kathleen
Street.
Kathleen Turner from Romancing the Stone.
Oh, no, I would have remembered that. No, that'd have been amazing. I love that film.
Looking for Celebrity Squares there.
Yeah. But not her.
No.
So, somebody from Coronation Street.
Okay.
I was really high up, so it was hard to see the rest of the guests.
Yeah. Which square were you in?
Top right.
Top right. Yeah, that's not a bad square.
Yes. No, it's not a bad square, but not good if you get vertigo.
No, that's true. If you're playing noughts and crosses, go for centre right, then next go top middle. Then if the person paying attention, you can win by going in the top right.
Yeah, wish I could have offered that information, but I was asked very few questions, so I couldn't really volunteer that information to the contestants. So,
in reality, Dane, you're quite a new stand-up comedian. How long have you been going for?
This is my sixth year in the world of stand-up.
Yeah, and you were the first black man to be nominated for the Edinburgh Fringe Award.
First black Briton to be nominated for the Edinburgh Award.
Yeah, that's an important thing.
Yeah.
So that was in 2014. So that's, you've done two shows in Edinburgh.
Yep, two shows in
Edinburgh. And your current one is called?
Reasonable Doubts, which I'm touring at the minute.
Cool, cool. And, I was watching some stuff. There's a lot of... it's kind of a mixture of stuff. You've got some quite serious subjects you're dealing with.
Yep,
and then there's a very funny routine about cock goblins, which is
more
frivolous, I would say.
Yeah, I try and play the line between, between like getting on the soapbox. But I think it's good to mix the serious with the silly.
Yeah.
And maybe sugarcoat the pill that is the truth in stand-up. So, yeah.
What were you doing before you did stand-up?
I used to work in media sales before I had the courage to come out as a creative to my family. So after I graduated, I got a job working for Rupert Heseltine's company.
Oh, really? Rupert Heseltine?
Yeah, because his dad gave it to him.
Okay. So,
which is always nice if you could inherit a business. I worked for him for a few years, then I worked for a jobs board, and then worked for Auto Trader.
Oh, really?
In media sales.
Okay.
All terrible.
I did advertising sales, it's called, but I did it for four weeks. I can tell you when it was. I got sacked on Christmas Eve 1989. Then I said, well, I've only been here for 4 weeks. He said, oh, well, I'll let you come back then. I came back on New Year's Day to 1990,
mm-hmm.
and then they sacked me as soon as I arrived.
Okay.
Which I didn't think was really fair. They had a Christmas thinking.
I mean, the fact that you were going into work on New Year's Day was already unfair. So.
It might have been the 2nd of January, but it was certainly the first day of work. But yeah, I didn't sell anything. You must have managed to sell some stuff.
Yeah, occasionally, but... As I was told by my manager at Auto Trader, most of the sales are down to luck anyway. So I don't know why you're getting up your own arse, Dane. Because everyone says they're quite arrogant. But then she'd be like, I need you to put together a sales forecast of clients that you think are 80% likely to buy from us. We're like, well, if it's half sales are down to luck, then I cannot be any more certain than 50%. Then I was given a verbal warning.
That's a pretty good manager saying, it's just luck.
Yeah, well, no, she was on The Apprentice as well.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, yeah. So,
was it Katie Hopkins?
No, she was in the second season, Naomi Leigh.
Okay.
And, that's how that turned out.
But so you're doing a sitcom at the moment called Sunny D. Is that partly about that time? Or is
Sunny D is a kind of semi-autobiographical look at my life before I started doing comedy, which is embellished for comedic effect. So it just covers a lot of my experiences in the open plan office and trying to find to be a part of, I guess, a cog in the corporate machine that is quaternary industry. And selling people stuff they don't need and, I guess, working for the devil. So, but with hilarious consequences.
And you're a twin, in real, in the sitcom, you've got a twin sister, and you've got a twin sister in
real life. I have a twin sister in real life, yeah. There's an hour between us.
Right.
Which she never lets me forget. And I kind of wish that there were two separate days between us, but that's not been the case. It just means that your McDonald's birthday parties aren't as fun as they should be. And funny enough, my sister, when we were growing up, my sister had her eyes fixed on a career in the creative industry and entertaining, and she had a subscription to Stage Magazine. She used to go to auditions.
Right.
And I guess as an actor rebelling, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to go work at an office. That's what you're doing. And now I do this, and she works in sales. So.
Okay. Is there rivalry between twins?
It's weird. We've always had quite a cliched rivalry, to the point where when I see other twins getting on, I'm like, ugh, incest, what's wrong with you guys? It's weird, yeah. So
Romulus and Remus, of course, they didn't get on. Cain and Abel, they didn't get on.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I can't hear her, though, because she's a girl.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I can't really solve problems that way.
No. Or murder her.
Or murder her.
Because she's a girl.
Yeah. Well, not. Yeah, I mean, that's not related to her gender. No.
Murder is bad.
Anybody.
Yeah. And is there any psychic link between the two of you, having spent that time in the womb together?
No, not really. No. I don't think there's any real kind of psychic link. I know when she's trying to fuck with me, I can see in her eyes, but no real telepathy. Mm. It's a shame. Although it's very easy for us both to do our data protection if, like, a bank calls us. So I know, like, where she lives and her date of birth.
Yes.
So that's enough to if I wanted to steal from her.
And you just put on a wig and walk in and pretend to be.
I could do it, yeah. Give that a go as well. And, you know, and like I said, we're in a society right now where we're becoming more aware that gender is not that rigid and binary. So if I do go into a bank with a moustache and a wig, then they can't really ask me questions until it's after the fact. So she should be aware of that.
It's kind of with that twin thing. So you're like sharing a womb. I mean, you presume you don't remember any of that bit, but
no.
That's I mean, that's odd, right? You're pressed up against another human being like that.
Yeah, it's
sort of strange.
It's very weird. It's it means I value personal space a lot more than most people.
One was. I've watched my daughter being born. I couldn't stand, you know, another one coming out after that would have been.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, and it was quite. Yeah, it was tough. It was.
Yeah.
I was when my mother had my sister and I. There was a lot of complications during the birth, so it was a race against time, which can affect a child. So I have issues with patience and attention as a result of that. Also, I was in an incubator when I was born, which was again good because it gave me my own personal space and reflection time. So yeah. It was tough, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Not like the miracle of childbirth, but just like the twin thing and the complications.
I don't think it's like something that can happen retrospectively, though, is it? You can't like become a twin halfway through your life. And it's always at the plot of Twins with Danny DeVito. I can't remember.
Sure,
you either are a twin or you're not.
But I don't know. Stem cell research is improving all the time.
Suppose,
so
you can be cloned. You could be cloned as a twin, so you could have like a younger version of yourself. That'd be cool, though.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
I wish I had a younger version of myself, just only because sometimes I meet kids and I think, oh, someone should hit you, but I'm too old to do that. the little data, carrying that stuff out would be great.
And you grew up in Hither Green, which I couldn't really... I'd like to find out a bit about. I don't know anything about Hither Green.
It's not necessarily remote, but it's almost like it's at the bottom of a valley, and so it's very hard to reach by public transport. But they have a nearby station. But it's interesting growing up in Hither Green because it kind of borders Kent as well as Lewisham. So it's in the London Borough of Lewisham. But it's also near Blackheath.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of connects between a number of different demographics.
Okay. It looks quite pretty in the...
Oh, yeah.
It's got a very flirtatious name, kind of hither grease.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's very, very enticing.
Yeah.
But and it means that, you know, because it's the surrounding areas have been so diverse, I think a lot of people now discuss gentrification. And it's not necessarily a new thing to me, because I said I was quite close to somewhere like Blackheath, where, you know, houses start at, you know, 1 million, whereas, like, in Lewisham, well, a lot of people don't even have houses in Lewisham, so... It's hard, but I think the only thing that's annoying thing I've seen recently in Hither Green was that on my road, some of the parents close off the street to have like so their kids could play out in the street like the kids do in America. It was like there's a park around the corner. There's just no need for this, and I just found that really annoying. Right. Take your kid, you know, just make them walk around to the park. There's no need to close off the entire road.
Yeah.
So. That's pretty much it.
And your parents are from Grenada?
Yes, both my parents. My dad's from the mainland, Grenada, from St. Patrick. My mum is from Carriacou, which is a small island. So Grenada's made up of the main island, and then Carriacou is a small island, and then Petite Martinique is one of the smallest inhabited places in the world. Carriacou has a population of about 7,000, can walk around it in a day. I cannot get into any relationships with women from that island. For genetic reasons. But it's very nice, it's very scenic. And it's that right mix of kind of rural but industrialized, but not so much. So it's still relatively unspoiled, and you won't see anybody walking around in like football kits at an Irish pub. So it's nice.
I went to Grenada with my wife on one of our first holidays we went to. So I didn't see much of Grenada.
Good.
But it seemed nice.
Yeah, no, it's very nice. It felt warm, and I'm sure. Yeah,
it was lovely. Nice.
The temperature helped.
We were there at Christmas. It was Christmas and New Year.
Cool.
We spent there.
I haven't been there for a few years. Gary Rhodes has a house in Grenada.
Okay.
And I intend to buy it one day.
Cool. I'm going to ask you an emergency question.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some new ones. So I'm very excited about that. I've got to write 500 emergency questions because one of the Kickstarter things I did was to write a book of 500 emergency questions to give to people. I thought I had probably 250, but I had 100. I've now got 140. They're quite hard to write, so there might be some time before that book arrives. It's going to be good when you get it, though, because it'll have questions like this in it. What was the most impressive celebrity who ever came to your school?
Oh.
Bang!
So came to my school as like a visitor?
Like as a guest, not as a...
Oh, as a guest.
That's another question.
Oh, okay.
Don't jump ahead to that one. I've got about four questions about celebrities in school. This is one about, someone came to give you a talk, as a visitor to the school, or was a parent in the school?
I think it's Princess Margaret, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
She came, so everyone just had to line up and do some form of curtsy.
Yeah.
And... that was pretty much it, and I'm not a monarchist, but that was fine.
Yeah,
I think that's the most famous person I can think of.
You know Prince Andrew?
I don't know him.
Stories I could tell you about him. So,
I've heard a few of them. I'm sure that leads to another line of emergency questions.
It might do. Did any future celebrities go to your school?
That's a good question. A few. Rafe Spall went to my school.
Okay.
Sounds
like quite a posh school you went to.
Oh, it's Haberdashers Asks.
Nice. So,
but it's Hatcham College, which was almost like the outreach one.
Okay.
So it wasn't like the other, so people might be familiar with like Haberdashers Elstree and Adams, because Sacha Baron Cohen went to that school.
Yeah.
But I went to one in New Cross, so KCB, the singer, went there, Scott Parker, footballer.
Okay.
And then Sean Wright Phillips and Bradley Wright Phillips went there as well. So, impressive alumni.
The most famous person who came to my school was Rick Buckler, who used to play the drums in the Jam.
That's pretty cool.
His dad was the art teacher, and... his brother was the art teacher, and when the Jam broke up, Rick Buckler came with his new band, Time UK, to play in the school hall, so...
How did it go down?
Pretty exciting day. I would say it's arguable that the Time UK were not as good a band as the Jam. We can have an argument about that. We'll see. Did the siblings of any celebrities teach at your school?
Not that I know of, yeah.
Mr. Buckler is Rick Buckler's brother to our ass. Okay, here's another new emergency question. I think that's good. I think that's going to get to some gold dust. That was pretty good gold dust. Mainly the Rick Buckler bit. Can you? I just thought, what would I like to ask myself? And thought people will be impressed when they hear about the old Rick Buckler. Remember Rick Buckler? No. Could you ever have sex with someone who called breasts boobies?
Yeah, I could.
You could? Yeah. I don't think I could.
I could.
What if they were doing it during sex? Would you be? I think I'd have to stop if they said, "Ooh, ooh." Imagine I'm a lady.
Yeah.
Ooh, Dane. Ooh. Touch my boobies. Could you? Would you? I'd have to stop at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's all in delivery, I guess.
Yeah. So. I don't think boobies can. It's weird because I think boobs is like if they said, ooh, ooh. Rich does it as if it's me, not you, because it'd be weird. I'm like, ooh, Rich, touch my boobs. I'd go, yeah, okay. But if it's boobies, I'd go, sorry, you have to leave now.
Yeah.
Wait, that's weird. It's true, though, isn't it?
I think people who do that, like, refer to boobies, it's kind of weird because people are quite repressed and about their bodies still, so sometimes people say boobies. And I've learned in experience, normally, when girls are talking about each other's breasts, they'll say, like, you've got lovely boobs or boobies. Because, because then it just, seems less like you're leering, I suppose. Whereas men use more, like, I guess have in their lexicon stuff like tits.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably more of a turn of phrase, like saying to somebody, oh yeah, let me see your tits.
Yeah, that's it's most of the words for women's anatomy generally are kind of not as funny as men's ones.
Yeah.
And not as kind of usable. I mean, it's difficult to think of.
It's that locker room talk with you.
It is like the locker room talk. Now, pussy is quite an, you know, I think it's quite an unpleasant name for.
Yeah. Some people find it quite aggressive.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're saying grab my pussy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah.
If you say gently caress my pussy,
that sounds okay. I wouldn't want to restrict anybody's Lexus. So whatever helps the mood. I think growler's a horrible word. If someone uses the word growler, they have no respect for vaginas. So.
It's quite bad. This is a good new merch question. I was interviewing someone. Some people paid to be interviewed by me. We'll see if we put those out, like members of the public. And I came up with this one during that interview just earlier today. Have you ever lived in an igloo?
I haven't in so far as the structure, but I have lived in a room with igloo-like temperature at university. So. I stayed in like a 3-story house in Bradford.
Yeah.
And as well as the mice. I mean, the house is basically after we moved out, the house became condemned.
Right.
So it's a testament to myself that we could spend the whole year there without any of us getting cholera. And and I remember once just seeing a crackhead run past the window. And it was like no garden, so I don't know how you even got there. So, but yeah, that's the closest I've come to living in an igloo.
I think living in an igloo would be quite warm.
I mean, unless you maybe touch the sides.
Yeah. If you sleep with your face against the ice, that might not be so good.
Exactly, yeah.
But also, those Eskimos, they have all those lovely, big coats, don't they? Like they're like super parkas they wear.
Lots of hair
and pull out tight. I'd be an Eskimo. Would you like to live with the Eskimos?
I could try it. But then, just so I'm aware, because is Eskimo still a accepted term?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Because it's Inuit, isn't it?
If there are any Eskimos tonight, I would just like to apologise for my...
Because I was hesitant to use the word, because the word, especially Canadians will correct you, say it's actually Inuit.
Yeah.
So... Just one particular, yes.
Yeah, now you've been racist against the non-Inuit, non-Eskimo Eskimos. Aren't Eskimos.
I was brought up in a quasi igloo, so it's very hard for me to interact with people. It's the right terms, apologies.
Shit, I've opened a can of worms there with the old igloo question. I should have kept away from that. That was my bad. I'll take that. We'll talk a little bit about ethnicity then, shall we? Given we got there, there's a great quote that you talked to Brian Logan of The Guardian,
mm-hmm.
who I don't have that much time for. this is the quote: "If we lived in an egalitarian society and people weren't polarised by race and gender, and if there was no glass ceiling for me, I wouldn't need to do comedy for a living." So you think without your ethnicity, you wouldn't be a comedian?
Well, not to say without my ethnicity, but I was happy being able to do comedy and, I suppose, perform jokes and performance as a hobby more than a profession But then I found working within, you know, the corporate world that I was encountering a lot of glass ceilings. Yeah. And also, I guess, and that might just be down to my acting, that a lot of the observations I make are in terms of, like, dissecting issues like race and gender. So yeah. I feel, and I think that's I guess I kind of was trying to find a more succinct way of saying that a lot of art is, and the creation and creativity is kind of stimulated by pain. Sure. And iniquity, and a lot of the time people that are affected by any kind of oppression or marginalization can only articulate that through dramatic performance. Because yeah. For myself personally, I feel like, so I'm like a hip hop fan, for example, and I remember Chuck D referring to hip hop as like Black America's CNN, and I completely agree with that in terms of the fact that there's not really a narrative from the African diaspora outside of the arts. So I feel that, yeah, I rely on it a lot, and I feel if maybe there was more equal representation or opportunities for people to assert themselves politically or economically or socially, then you probably wouldn't need art as much as an outlet as much as it's useful. So yeah. That's what that meant.
Yeah, cool. Did you see the Andrew Lawrence documentary that was on?
I haven't seen it yet, but I have heard about it.
Right.
And I did meet him post outburst,
right?
So, but he seemed real cordial, and
it's fascinating. Actually, I wish you'd seen it. Well, I'm sure you will see it. But it is before. If you know about this, and it's sort of weird they made a documentary about it, because it was very much like within the comedy world. He wrote a Facebook post that, you know, I imagine he was a little bit drunk and, you know, not really planning of it to come to.
Well, it's like I say to everybody: like, a large part of comedy is driving. And if you're driving for maybe 3 or 4 hours having arguments only with yourself, you're probably going to win those. And then after a while, even the most outlandish things you think are going to start to sound like they make sense. And now, normally, your mind and your mouth, there's a gap between them where you can kind of rationalize that. But social networking exists as a laxative for people's heads now. So normally stuff you think and think, oh, I'll sleep on that and maybe I will be a bit more relaxed. Now you can just be like, I think this happened to me today. And then it's out in 140 characters, which again doesn't leave you much time to articulate yourself.
No.
But yeah, unfortunately for like people like Andrew, I guess the buccal equivalent of a sphincter has been removed by social networking. That makes sense. So
it's weird. He's a very shy comedian. I've met him a few times. He's, you know, he's doing interesting kind of playing with offence or playing with a character.
Yeah.
And even this, I think it's hard to see whether it's. And even he, I don't think knows whether he's now a character or real.
Yeah.
And the thing that they homed in on in the documentary wasn't really the offensive bit about it. I think he was talking about that comedians not. It's too easy just take the piss out of UKIP and that's an easy place to go, which is true, but also you can still find good jokes about any subject.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And it's an important subject to talk about.
And they
about.
Keep on giving.
Yeah, so. They do. And it's an important subject to talk about, so it's just stupid to go, you shouldn't joke. The minute it was, you shouldn't joke about something stupid. But he said, you know, his bitterness about not being on TV, which I don't, again, quite understand because he's doing quite well, came out in saying, you know, that on panel shows you'll have ethnic comedians and women posing as comedians, which are those two.
Yeah.
That's sort of the weird thing. But in the actual documentary, I mean, he's so you know, on stage and in those Facebook things, he's so out there and going for it. And then he reads of Steve Bennett reviews, the guy who does Chort, which is the big comedy website, and he's going, "Well, that's hardly fair," you know, and he's quite mouthy. Then he meets Steve Bennett, who sort of reviews his show to his face, and just it's going, "Yeah, well, fair enough." He's this meek little guy. And I think the really telling part of it, which is really interesting, is just going, he's going through a scrapbook of all his clippings from his early days and going, I just feel sorry for any, you know, new comedians coming up and they're told they're going to be the next big thing and then that doesn't happen. So that's what it's all about.
That's exactly what it came down to, is that it all stems from the fact that, you know, I think a lot of people liked Andrew Lawrence because around the time when he started breaking through into television, he had a voice which sounded very different to, like, a lot of his peers at the time.
Yeah.
And I guess he had it in his head that was going to carry him and his growth would be continual. But I'm sure he'd be made aware that the path to success is not a linear one. And as I said, he kind of ended up voicing his frustrations without somebody to tell him, it's one Janekin. This is why he is.
I think it's just because you, like, you know, I've certainly been, you have success and then it got you less success and it's hard to cope with, and you cope with it in different ways and you blame everyone but yourself.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, but a lot of it's about luck. A lot of it's about just being picked up by the right person. And, you know, everyone goes in and out of fashion.
Exactly.
So you're never going to be successful all the time.
Everyone has their 15 minutes and it's how you use that. And, you know, he might think to himself, you know, if he realised, you know, the apex of his fortune then, everything went well, then he'd burn out, then what would he be doing now? So, yeah, I think that's just a lot of, I guess, angst that kind of manifested itself.
But it's sort of interesting that someone can home in on that, right? So ethnic comedians, which is not, you know, I just, when you look at it and say how many people you would classify as ethnic comedians actually are on TV, and is it in any way proportionate to the UK population?
Well, I would say it is. I mean, and, you know, to be honest, he's not the only person that's voiced that. The only difference between Andrew and a lot of other people is that he's just said it out loud.
Sure.
But I would say I've seen more shows about robots than I have about black people on BBC. So I've seen more shows about pineapple upside down cake than black people on the BBC. So, I mean, I kind of found it hard to empathise with his problem there, what he refers to ethnic. And ethnic is a very ambiguous term anyway.
It is.
So.
Well, but it sort of also implies that someone could only, they've only got somewhere because of their ethnicity.
Yeah.
But with comedy, it doesn't work like that, does
it? Well, exactly, yeah. It's because, you know, we can argue that people put in fortuitous positions because they have, you know, they may tick a few boxes, but you're not going to fool the crowd. So they may give you a minute or so grace, but then if you don't have the material, you're not really going to prosper.
Yeah.
And I would say as well, guys, in case anybody's wondering, if I could choose to have an advantage in life based on my race, it would not be for 20 minutes on a stage. So, if I had a genius, like, how would you like to play your race card? Would you like to be, you know, 6 times more likely to be stopped and searched or refused a bank loan or the opportunity to own property? No, I want to be funny for 20 minutes. That would show the world. I wouldn't do that. So, that's kind of what I think there. And then also as well, again, if you kind of break down comedy in the UK by region, I would argue probably in most parts of the country, your more prolific acts are, you know, white, heterosexual, cisgender men. As far as I know, most people know who Peter Kay is in the north, or John Bishop, and they know Michael McIntyre in the south, you know, or if you go to Scotland, they'll know Frankie Boyle or Kevin Bridges or Dara O'Brien or, you know, Ross Noble in, you know. So I don't know where these poor, starving white men that will perform comedy for food are. So.
Well, it is, well, again, I mean, that came up with the recently with the Now show as well, and a couple of the presenters, people who've been with the show for 18 years. I mean, this show should not still be going. It's like an 18-year show. You've had a job for 18 years and you lose your job, and then you go, oh, this isn't fair, this is political correctness gone mad, which I don't think is quite fair on John Holmes, but it's still, you know, it's like, there is that kind of element of white privilege of like, oh my God, I've lost my job, this is terrible,
without
realising.
Well, exactly, and, you know, I don't think there's any need to get that petulant, because then you could argue, then why are all these white guys losing jobs? Because, you know, a few of you were fucking people's children. So, you know,
most of the cast of the Now show, that is so definitely. It'll be 20 years before we get to them, but they're definitely. But I don't know, we're in this really weird situation where, like, things are kind of colliding, aren't they, in that, like, political correctness, and things are moving in the right direction, and there's sort of the death throes of extreme religion and also of extreme right wing people in you know, what's happening in America is sort of insane. You know, it's again that white privilege, or people who feel they're being challenged by something they're not really being challenged
by. Same thing, it says the death throes, and this is the thing about white privilege is that it can, as it exists, it works against, you know, people that aren't in the within that, what's called the, I guess, collection for protection of white privilege, but then at the same time, it works against you because it supposes that being white predisposes you to a better life, which makes it a lot more difficult. That if obviously your life, no one's life is perfect, it makes it a lot harder for you to receive any kind of empathy. And really, even discussing white privilege, where you're looking at it as a positive or negative thing as a white person, it really is just used as a tool to further divide people anyway. And it's like Bill Burr said a lot of times, that, you know, people think, oh, if I was white, everything would be easy. And I've never been under that impression in the first place, you know. And it's the fact that rather than looking at stuff like white privilege, I think that a lot of the comics that are referring to it are conforming to, I guess, business standards, as opposed to, you know, being true to the art of it. So people are like, I don't know if I can do this because of political correctness. Well, yes, you can, because you have a microphone and you have your own mouth and you have free will. So say it and deal with the consequences. And that kind of, I find that kind of annoying sometimes. Like, I don't know if I can say this, or I'm not allowed to say this. Well, you are allowed to say that. So if you're afraid of the consequences, then you're a coward and that's your business. But you can't blame anyone else but yourself, because you're in control of yourself. You write your own material and you should be able to deal with the consequences. Have some balls about it. Or gonads about it. Again, not gender specific.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think, well, and also these people are basically saying, oh, I'm saying the stuff that we're not, you're not allowed to say.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely, you know, I mean, fucking Donald Trump's saying all the stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
And doing all this stuff and not getting...
Donald Trump's been saying it for years, yeah, yeah. As is Bill O'Reilly's been saying it for years, Rush Limbaugh's been saying it for years. Yeah. So really, some of the stuff you're saying is kind of hack when you think about it. There's been a right-wing narrative for a long time. And also, really, if you are, again, before anything else, I think, and it's, I guess my own personal opinion is that as a comic, you really shouldn't even be seeking to conform to the bipartisan paradigm in the first place, because what you're doing is trying to get to scratch the surface and get to people's consciousness. This is what we're doing. It's a stream of consciousness. So you shouldn't even be thinking about it in terms of right-wing or left-wing structure. It's just like, this is how I feel. And before anything else, and before anyone has any political allegiance, they're human beings, and most people can't be rigidly right-wing. I got into an argument recently with somebody online after the news quiz, and he was accusing us of being leftards and socialists, and this went back and forth because...
Comedians.
And this went back and forth because I like to practice something called troll judo, where I deal with them with some effective takedowns. And he... he was saying something about exercising my brain, and I made a reference to saying his physique, saying, I don't think you're somebody who should be pontificating about exercise. And then he said, well, it's because I'm disabled.
Right.
Which I guess was him saying, well, now you should feel bad. And I was like, well, that's strange, because the fact that you're referencing that you're disabled is that there should be some empathy from me, which sounds kind of socialist when you think about it. So, yeah. And then also, it's even when, you know, people are being outspoken about, you know, socialism, and you do realise that there was like a £1 billion bailout for banks, which are the epitome of a free market. So then too big to fail doesn't really make sense in terms of capitalist structure. So I think anyone who considers themselves smart enough to say these things should be aware of that as well. Otherwise, really what you're doing is you're just regurgitating stuff that you've read, and then... Yeah, just an idiot, really. Quite a more succinct way of putting
like
it.
Getting embroiled, I mean, I always do it. I get embroiled in all the Twitter stuff all the time, because I kind of... It passes the time, doesn't it?
It does pass the time.
It's enjoyable. But I know, you know, and I like... What I find interesting at the moment is there's certain things, if you mention them, and it's not just... It's on all sides, because like Jeremy Corbyn's one of them.
Yep.
If you mention Jeremy Corbyn, suddenly... Oh, 10 people who don't follow you will have something to say about that.
Yeah.
So they've clearly got Jeremy Corbyn box in their Twitter.
Yeah.
It's not that someone's retweeted it, it comes in too fast. They're ready to come in, and they come in with some extreme comment and quite rude comment.
Yeah, all the time.
And today it was about Brexit. I mentioned Brexit, and I even said in Brexit, I'm mentioning Brexit, and therefore I'm about to get 5 comments from people. Yeah. I don't know, it'll be rude to me. And sure enough, some people came in, and they've then kindly proved me right about that.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the people... And what I love about the Brexit, the Remains versus the Leaves, is they think you're obsessed with it. You're obsessed with it, and going... You've got a box on your Twitter waiting for someone to say Brexit.
I don't even know you.
And call them a fucking twit.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know you.
You don't know anything about me.
Exactly.
So
I think does it
create just a crazy little? I wonder whether the social media thing has allowed those kind of views that was being sort of pushed away and maybe not stamped out, but just were forbidden, and people felt they couldn't say them, and it gives them that. They're coming out of the shadows a bit because they're able to say stuff. And then has that led to Donald Trump and all these people? Because suddenly they've gained confidence as a result of it.
I think those are two separate phenomena, in that all social networking is done is that it's given people the idea that opinion is validated because it, you have something tangible or something visual that you can see. And whenever people come to lament the whole thing about vicious trolls and the things they say, I always tell people to remember, and I'm always able to rationalise it, especially if you're working in comedy, anyone who's trolling you and hiding behind some kind of avatar, and I've always reminded trolls of this fact, is that whatever you say, you go to work and be a different person and you shut up and you get your boss's coffee. I say what I say on stage too.
Yeah.
Like a man. You remember that.
Yeah.
Or, but then at the same time, I always tell people, you know, before Twitter, any kind of, you know, vitriol that you saw from trolls is anything, you'd only see that in like a service station toilet or on a school desk or the back of a bus. Like when you used to be at school, you might see someone with school a swastika on a desk and you think, well, that's not nice. But then as soon as you leave the desk, you wouldn't think about it again. And it's only because of social networking and because it remains there that it seems very serious.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've met people in real life and who are trolls, and it's a real sad existence, guys, so I just wouldn't really worry about it.
Yeah.
But, whereas the whole thing with Donald Trump, I don't think necessarily that he's given validation and allowed these people to kind of resurface again. I think they were kind of always there. And as you said, I think it's just... I think these people kind of realise, because of social networking, that there's now an opportunity for different narratives from around the world and from historically marginalised groups to have a voice. I think some of these people are realising that despite what they've been fed, they are actually in the minority.
Yeah.
And that scares them. And so this is just them trying to attempt a backlash at the fear that people of their political disposition are basically on the way out.
Yeah.
And so, but then at the same time, I think the whole Donald Trump thing, I like it because I guess I'm a bit of a nihilist and... And also, I've observed at the turn of the century, just Western civilization having more of a focus, and we've kind of gone from capitalists or people thriving within a free or mixed market to consumerists, where we no longer have a system of supply and demand. It's more supplying a demand and just stimulating demand, and people want things they don't really need, but it's mm-hmm. just said that they should have it. And he's just a personification of that, you know. He's a ruthless capitalist. He engaged in double standards and duplicity, and you know he's a misogynist. And there's a reason why he's here, is that we need to look at this monster in the face, because we've kind of created that. Because
yeah.
you know, a lot of time people do turn a blind eye to things like rape culture, and we do turn a blind eye to rampant capitalism at the expense of you know our ecosystem.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know I think about stuff like, I don't have any kids now, but you know people always say, you know, when your kids get old enough, you have to tell them about the birds and the bees. You know, the way we're going, that might be a short conversation. So, yeah, I think, in answer to the question, like, they're two separate things. But I just think that sometimes society forgets that technological advances do not go at the same speed as human evolution. So we're still very similar people, or the same kind of people that we were, you know, maybe 100 or so years ago. So,
well, probably even longer. I mean, thousands
of years ago. So sometimes I think, who were the kind of people that would go out and watch a public execution? Those are the people that are on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, weirdos.
Yeah. I mean, the political system feels like, definitely the UK's political system feels broken. You know, the party system has broken.
Yeah.
But like, there's now no choice. But even when there were two choices, that still wasn't enough. But now there's 5 or 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 choices. That system doesn't work anymore. And I think all of these votes, I think the Donald Trump thing, because he's not really losing...
No, he's losing
a bit of votes, but not...
Well,
like,
not as much as you think for some of the things he said.
All the things he said. It's not like this week is on, now he's suddenly... Yeah. You know, everything he said before has been equally as bad.
Yeah. But again, it's because of the fact that, you know, in society, there's a lot of maxims that we have that we repeat to ourselves and we don't really think about them. Like, whenever you think about politics, and again, within this bipartisan paradigm, people are always like, well, you have to pick the lesser of two evils. There shouldn't be any evil. There should not be a choice between two evils. Maybe there shouldn't be any evil when it comes to a political process. Like, no one considers that. So, yeah, I think maybe we're at a point now where we need to revamp our entire system. And it's just weird for people to understand and kind of deal with that, because most people that are alive now have no precedent. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, so... something needs to change, and just we need to create something new, and we're all responsible for that.
And leaving the EU was that thing. That's sweet. Well, yeah. Now we've done it, everything will be fine.
Well, this is, yeah, we'll see how that
goes. Much is the pound worth against the euro now? Okay, no, it's probably fine. That's probably fine. No, that was very interesting. Very deep stuff, which I knew this was going to be.
Yeah,
it's okay, but I like it. I mean, your stand-up is deep as well.
Yeah, but I'm going to say, because I feel like I'm losing some people here.
No,
you're not. Throw something stupid in again.
How about I ask you an emergency question? But, you know, these people like listening to stuff. They're idiots. They're not like a normal comedy audience who need a joke about Willies. Yeah, there you go. So we're off. Yeah, they're off.
Well, it works for me too. I thought it was funny.
If you were given the powers of a King Midas, but could choose the thing that your fingers turned everything into, what would you choose to turn everything into that you touch?
Oh, to turn everything into.
You know, he turned everything into gold, as you're aware.
Yes, he did.
Choose anything, but everything you touch is going to turn into that thing.
Into that thing.
Watch out, it's a poison. It sounds good,
it's not good.
Not as good
chalice.
As you think.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
If you chose everything to turn into a poison chalice, it's really a poison chalice. that's a really bad choice.
This is a tough one.
No, you can get some money for the chalices.
Ooh.
But then they're poisoned in the purple. Probably people would drink it and then they'd be dead.
Yeah, they'd be dead, yeah. But then any law enforcement would also be poison chalices, so
yeah,
I'd get
true,
off scot-free. So it's one to consider.
It would get to a point where people stop drinking from the poison chalices. I think they would realise all the chalices were
But then
poisoned.
All the newspapers to warn them would also be poison chalices. So
that's true.
But what would I choose to turn everything into? I would like to think maybe some kind of nondescript energy. just turn people into just like pure consciousness.
Right.
And then, so that way, if people aren't, you know, conscious of their mortal coil,
yeah,
and how they perceive it, then I guess everyone would be part of that collective consciousness again and wouldn't care.
Yeah, wow, that's a good answer. That's a better answer than that question deserves, isn't it? You were thinking I'd do the Skittles like the bloke on the Skittles have, and that's really be great, all those Skittles. But every time you picked up a Skittle to eat, it would turn into a load of Skittles, mate. You haven't thought it through. Oh, that's good. You like Skittles.
Because I used to like Skittles, but then they were 20p at the shop and I bought too much and got a really bad headache once. And that's why I didn't go for Skittles.
Really? Okay, yeah. So,
in case anyone was wondering.
I've never eaten that many Skittles and I've eaten a lot of Skittles.
Oh, like in America, they have like 5 different types of Skittle in the packet. So
yeah,
it's very easy to get very sick on those. It's a cautionary tale, guys.
Do you know CJ from Eggheads?
No.
No. Have you ever killed someone but never spoken about it?
No.
Okay, it's a good question, and most people have said no so far. But one person's going to trip up on the ending. When that day happens, front page news for Lil Richie Herring. Ka-ching! It's what? Chris Addison, he smashed some cupboards without telling anyone. That's what he's done, Chris Addison. We'll find out about it. I'm convinced it's him. let's have a look. There was one I looked at earlier that I wanted to do for you, and then... yeah, I've forgotten what it was. Richard Dawkins claims to have seen dogs doing a 69. What's the worst lie you've ever told to impress him? Always works.
I told a girl 2 years ago that, in fact, moths go towards the light because they're looking for the darkest part of the room, which is behind the light. Makes no sense. Makes no sense.
Was she impressed by that fact?
Initially.
Yeah.
Obviously, I forgot that Wikipedia existed, so I brought it back there.
Okay.
With shots. That ended a lot happier than that sounded. Can I just want to give you that caveat that we had fun.
Yeah. Is there a celebrity that you're mistaken for?
Not mistaken for, but other comics I get mistaken for. Like,
oh, yeah.
2 comics in particular, one called Marlon Davis and another one called Nico Yearwood.
Okay.
And Nico told me that when I was nominated, people were buying him drinks. which is fine. Live it up. But don't do anything too bad. Like, take advice, don't Cosby out.
Yeah. Well, I work, people are always tweeting me telling me I'm like, what are you doing in McDonald's in Peterborough or whatever. And so there's loads of blokes who look like, enough blokes who look like me that people generally think it's me. And one time I wrote a Metro article about someone swearing and in public and me being annoyed about it. And someone said, well, that is ironic given how you were behaving in that curry house in Walthamstow last night. And there was some horrible Richard Herring lookalike claiming to be Richard Herring going around, I presume, being racist and unpleasant
and being boorish. And this is what I'm saying. Having a twin sounds like a lot of fun. Can cause problems.
Good. If you had to choose between dating a man who was a 6-foot-tall penis or a man who, instead of having a penis, had a tiny man where his penis should be, which of those two men would you go on a date with? One of them's a penis. Really, when I said man, I mean, he would identify
as a penis. Is he like a... Does he still have, like... Is he still able to talk and stuff?
Yeah, he's got...
An articulated penis.
What I'm giving him is a face on the helmet.
Uh-huh.
And meatus, the opening, is not his... That's just at the top of his head like a blowhole.
Uh-huh.
His eyes are on his helmet and mouth has got no... But apart from that, he's just a penis, no balls.
Mm-hmm.
He'd sliver around like a sort of slug.
Yeah, yeah.
So he might wear a suit with, like, false arms on it, like Rod Hull.
Yeah.
Just to make him look more... To make him feel more comfortable in human society.
And so, if he is... either entertained or aroused, is he able to stand upright?
I think he's permanently erect, I think, because I think otherwise it would become humiliating for him.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to go with the other guy.
Everyone does.
Okay, yeah.
Everyone does. cool. I thought I had some. Let me see if I've got another good new one. I've been writing so many emergency questions that I've kind of lost my track with what... this is a good one. This is a bit like the King Midas one. If you could choose the liquid that you weed, what liquid would you wee? It could be any liquid, but it's a bit like the King Midas one. Be careful, because, you know, you still have to get rid of the poisons in your body somehow.
Oh, okay, so...
So, you know, you think, it'd be great, I could just wee beer and then I'd drink beer. But, you know, you would die, so...
Yeah, it used to be a vicious cycle. It would, drinking and. Yeah.
But if there was a liquid you could have... Okay. Instead of this one, this is a better one. If you were God, this is it. This is what I want to ask. If you were God, what flavour would you have made ejaculant? Because it's like God didn't even consider that it was going to be eaten. It's like that was a surprise to him. Because he would have made it taste of something different, I think, than it does. It's poor foresight from God. What would you like it to taste of?
Well, I guess it's me being considerate of potential lovers.
Yeah.
So...
Double spunk.
Yeah, yeah.
More concentrated salt. I don't need a taste. I mean, some people like the taste, right?
Yeah, some people do.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm looking at you, Andy. I just imagine some people do.
I would... Something... I don't know. Like coconut water or something, I guess.
Yeah, that's...
So I think I still have a similar consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is coconut water the same as your spunk? Because that is, there's something wrong.
I think it depends how...
I mean, you're a younger man than me, but that is wrong, isn't it, right? It's got to be a little bit more.
I do very little research post-coitus.
If you'd listened to the show before, you would have realised it's mainly about... You know, weird. I let you talk for about 20 minutes about something serious, and then it's mainly ejaculant and wee.
It's good to know.
How about this one? How do you sleep at night?
I toss and turn a lot in my sleep. Yeah, yeah. So sometimes, it's start off my back. I normally sleep facing the door.
Okay.
In case people come in.
Right.
So.
So you can say hello.
Yeah. So take her. But it varies, but it's normally facing the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. In case there's a fire, so I can help people, and also because I feel like I have the physique of an arsonist. So I like to be able to get out and get my alibi sorted first, because I feel once the fire brigade arrive, they're going to take a look at me and be like, well, there you go.
That's another scandal.
It's just a thing I have, is why also I don't sleep in the nude, because I'm just going to look like the naked arsonist. And that's an easy way to shift tabloid newspapers. Yeah. Naked arsonist.
Who would you prefer died, Windsor Davis or Matthew Crosby's wife? Do you know Windsor Davis?
Not that well.
No.
So I guess it's him.
Yeah, okay. He's always an old man. Do you know Matthew Crosby?
I do know Matthew Crosby. And
do you know his wife?
I do know his wife.
Yeah, she's nice, isn't she?
She's really nice. Yeah. And Matthew is such a sweet guy. Like, just picturing the grief on his face will just be on my conscience too much. So, sorry, Windsor.
It's all right.
I feel like his family could handle it a lot more.
Well, Windsor Davis is probably he was in the sitcoms in the 70s, like Don Warrington, who you've got in in your sitcom.
Yes.
Have you seen Don's previous work when you can't? Is your pleasure dad?
Yeah, I've seen some of his stuff on Rising Dam. Yeah. I unfortunately didn't get to see him playing King Lear. But yeah, he is. I'd never used the phrase choose the scenery, but he does. It's really weird. We had a table read during filming, and I kept getting pulled aside. Everyone was like, look, Dane, please, the execs are in, please, can you project? I know you like to mumble, please. So I had this thing where I had to put a cork in my mouth. I don't know if anyone here has experience in theatre. So they gave me a cork in order to help me with my enunciation and to speak louder and project. Whereas Don he wouldn't even look up. It would just be like booming throughout, like THX, he'd just boom throughout the whole room. Right. It's amazing. So I was very much in awe of him. I'd have to kill him too, do I?
No, you can't. Let's let him live forever.
Yeah,
hopefully.
I think so. Yeah.
He's great. So you're doing a series of Sunny D?
Yeah, so the series is out 30th of November. It'll be available on the BBC iPlayer. So
it's going straight onto the iPlayer?
Yes, initially. And they will be hopefully around on terrestrial television. But I like to work to worst case scenario. So in the meantime, check it out on the iPlayer. And at the same time, I kind of like that it's on iPlayer as well. And you know, people do consume digital media now a lot more, and we're kind of a Netflix generation whereby, you know, people will look in more detail at shows, and so there are quite a few Easter eggs, as they're referred to, in the show. So yeah.
Do they all go up at once? Is it going to be the whole series going?
It will go weekly initially on the first run. But I don't want to speculate and let anybody down. So I was just be conservative and say it'll be weekly, and on either iPlayer.
Cool.
I think you guys will like it.
And you continue. Is the tour still going on?
Tour's still going on. Yeah. So the tour goes on into early December, includes a run at the Soho Theatre the first week of November. But if you're not local to there, I will be going far north as Bradford and then down in Newbury in Berkshire. So I'll be all over, and it's been fun.
Is it a theme show or is it?
It's a theme show. So it's kind of the title came from the fact that it was my second show. So I was worried about the sophomore jinx, which is where Reasonable Doubt's coming from. And the arc of the show is about, first of all, me dealing with some of my more personal doubts about the fact that the more you give to something like comedy, the harder it is for you to do stuff like maintain a relationship and keep in touch with friends. And like that isolation will give you, I guess, what's Andrew Lawrence syndrome now. And then me talking about more social doubts, so it's talking about stuff like race and gender and if we can all get along. And then finally, more global doubts. And some more rational and more irrational doubts, like, are we on the brink of a zombie apocalypse or a nuclear firestorm? And talking about stuff like, I guess, Trident and nuclear proliferation, which I think is a really weird thing, because if you are for nuclear proliferation, do you want to be right, though? It's like, all right, see, I told everybody, now eat your cockroach stuff, rats, kids. No, I don't want to eat. That's disgusting. I'd hit you if my hand hadn't fallen off from radiation poisoning. Like, no one... I don't know why everyone wants to be happy. It's a weird thing with missiles, because the investment is something you'll never get back.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that. The normal stuff.
And when you tour, do you tour on your own? Do you go out with another act?
I go out with another act.
Yeah.
And it's always good, as I said, to have company, so I'm not spending too much time winning arguments in my own head. And they've all been great. They've all been very strong and very varied. And yes, there is some white male heterosexual cisgender men doing tour support as well. because they're good at what they do, not because they're white guys.
And you were support for, my wife saw you with Catherine Ryan. At yes. How was that, the O2?
It was amazing. It's always good. It's great car journey. Catherine and I have a fondness for conspiracy theorists, conspiracy theory, especially involving the world of entertainment. So it's always good for discussion and a lot of our theories. For example, I believe that Michael Jackson, his cells have been taken, and something I've called Project Moonwalker involves the music industry attempting to clone him or treat other stars with his genes.
Right. And what evidence do you have for this?
Okay. There's loads of evidence, but might not be a safe space to discuss it right now. But, like, you know...
There's no one here, okay, really. Yeah.
I think because some... Like, there's some, I guess, stars now who have the appearance of Michael Jackson or sound like Michael Jackson. Like, The Weeknd, okay. He sounds like Michael Jackson, whereas Neo writes like Michael Jackson, whereas Chris Brown has very temperamental. I don't believe Justin Bieber is one of Michael Jackson's clones. And I feel like they are trying to put him in the position of being Michael Jackson. But that's never going to happen, guys. And I'll tell you why. It's because you cannot abuse a white male in the same way that Joe Jackson did to Michael without being arrested. I said it.
Wow. Okay. What about Paul McCartney being not Paul McCartney? What did you think about that one? That's my favourite conspiracy theory.
I mean, you know, if he wanted to have a clone, he's got the finances to do it.
Yeah, but so. He's dead. The original one's dead. It's the post. I mean, to be honest, the clone has done so much more than the original Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
He deserves everything he's got.
Yeah. So.
But
yeah.
He's piggybacked onto the original just by dint of looking exactly like him, luckily, and...
Yeah,
being able to play the bass.
And that's not new. Like, lookalikes have always been for the rich and powerful. Have always had lookalikes. Saddam Hussein used to have lookalikes in order to avoid the risk of assassination. But that's a really hard job to go for. Because if you're too good, then, you know, you might be assassinated. If you're not good and you go to the audition, just on the basis of insult, you'll be assassinated. So you can't really win. I may have stamped on some people's dreams there, but
I should have said there's a lot of Saddam Hussein fans in here who are still pretty upset about what happened. But maybe the light at the end of the tunnel there is it might not have been Saddam Hussein who got hanged in that room and videoed while he did it. That was awful. You know, I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but I don't think he did deserve it.
Well,
because I don't think anyone deserves to be killed. I don't believe in capital punishment.
Well, I mean, this is the thing about capital punishment that I find most scary is that, again, if you look at the prefix of it being capital, there are now businesses out there who have built they built a business model on the basis of supplying the instruments of death, which means that there are people that have meetings like, oh man, guys, not so many people have committed capital crimes this year, so no Christmas bonus. Like, that's really weird that some people are like, we need to, you know, increase our profit margins and or influence law accordingly so that people can be, you know, convicted of a crime and then sentenced to death, because people make money from that. People provide those instruments of death. And then the question is, if you are able to, you know, endorse a complete stranger dying for what you imagine might be a slight, then how are you that different from a murderer? So... And clearly, you know, it's not a deterrent because murder has not gone down in states where they have capital punishment. So,
do you think if we had a referendum in the UK about whether capital punishment should return, it would be yes or no?
I think it's scary, but I think it'd probably be a lot more divided than people think it might be. But then at the same time, people again say a lot of stupid things. Like, I hate when people say stuff like, we should bring back national service, and if people went to war, these kids would have... You didn't go to war. So why would you suggest that for other people? And then at the same time, why? It's like, for me, like, these ideas about stuff like going back to the old days, it's like, oh, maybe kids should be forced in army, we should bring back conscription. But then at the same time, if the idea is about help for heroes, we're in the midst of watching an NHS be privatised, so when these guys are coming back from war who have been the heroes that you've asked them to be, they won't have access to, like, any kind of physiotherapy if they are, you know, victims of an IED attack, or if they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, or just the system of being rehabilitated in society, that's not going to be provided for them. So do we really care about these heroes? And I'm saying that because, you know, some people may argue these are the kind of things which are described as white problems, but these acts who say, you know, they're held back by political correctness, they never say stuff like that. And I find it weird, you know, Andrew Lawrence, for example, you know, making references about, you know, how women are having, like, you know, preferred treatment in the world of entertainment. Again, you think most women are thinking, oh, I'd love a leg up on a panel show, or I'd much rather not be, you know, have the high likelihood that most women, over 60% of women, are going to experience some kind of sexual trauma before they're 18 years old. What the fuck would they choose? So it's just really weird that no one talks about stuff like that. It's gone on a really serious tangent, guys. Willies. All right. Okay.
It's always. Richard Thompson, how's the Antoine de Cleverly champagne? Is it nice?
Yeah, it's going down all right.
Is it going all right? They've got a whole bottle there. £15. Do you have a question? Would you like to ask Dane a question? That is part of your... That's what's given to your powers for what you've done. You don't have to use it. Make it a good one. Might be the last one.
Do you fear robots?
No, I don't really fear robots, but it's an interesting point. Why don't I fear them?
You should fear robots. That wasn't even a question. That's good. That was a man going, yeah, you should fear robots because they're coming for you.
No. I don't fear them because I guess because it's the inevitable, you know, there's technological advances and the gap between them is getting smaller and smaller. So, you know, artificial intelligence is here already. So, okay, you can't really fear something that's already taking place, but it's an interesting point to bring up because when we discuss our contracted economy and we discuss issues like Brexit, you know, as a lot of us know, that one of the, one of the motivators for people voting for Brexit was to have, you know, availability of jobs for, you know, people of Anglo-Saxon descent. But, you know, with the rise of the robots, you know, that's a race that have their own language and their own culture and don't need sleep and they're very insulated and no one can compete with them. So really, maybe you're right. Maybe we should be afraid.
Yeah.
Because robots, they don't need sleep or passports.
No. They can be brought in bit by bit as well. You can sneak them in.
Yeah, you can sneak them in because they can sneak in.
They can even just be here. They can get them out of the ground here.
Yeah.
The British robots made by British people.
Exactly.
Do you think that having sex with a robot is cheating if you're married? Because I don't. I think it should be
allowed. No, but I guess it's the definition of a robot because surely a vibrator is a form of robot, then, right?
It is.
And far be it from me to tell somebody what they do with their vibrator. So yeah, I guess it's not.
Would you
cheating.
Have sex with a robot? Have you seen Westworld yet? This is a new.
No,
robot
no. But I saw her though, which I guess is again dealing with. Well, I guess interspecies is not the right word because robots aren't technically a species. No, but
they're just nothing. It's fine. Yeah. The problem with the TV shows listening. Is they make the robots like have like a, oh they come alive and they have feelings. They're not gonna. So it's all right,
man. But if they are, Richard said that, not me, bro.
No, it's just it's like an elaborate wank. That's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah. They're really good at remembering things, by the way, robots.
Yeah, they are.
And
also, you know, if you get bored, you can just ask them a really difficult sum, and they can tell you the answer.
They can work it out,
It's my ideal woman, really. And it's like, if you say, it's like Susie Dent and Gareth Vorderman and... All the other women off humans all rolled, Gemma Chan rolled into one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go, what is the definition of apocalypse? It'll tell you. What a world. What a brave new world it's going to be. It's been lovely talking to you, Dane. And thanks very much for coming on the show. Do go and see him if you get a chance. He's going to be a massive superstar very soon. And you saw him here first. Ladies and gentlemen, Dane Baptiste.
Thank you very much.
Leicester Square Theatre Podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Dane Baptiste. Thank you to Pest for providing this lovely tune. Also, thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, and everyone at Go Faster Strike. Thanks to my producer, Ben Walker. He never here for this bit, so I can say whatever I like about him. He's a big, smelly douche. Thanks to George, he was very good at recording sound and is doing it at the moment. If there are any problems, it's his fault. It is a Sky Potato Fuzz and Go Faster Scripe production. If you enjoy these podcasts and you want to help contribute towards them, you can give as little a pound, or you can give a monthly sum or more than a pound. Go to www.gofasterstripe.com/badges. If you do a monthly badge, you get a secret channel, you get a badge, you get entry into a monthly competition where you can win loads of cool prizes, and you get emails warning you ahead of time of what the guests are going to be and all sorts of stuff like that. So why not do that? Gofasterstripe.com/badges. Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.